Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode.
Let me start with the first one. So we have Tushar and Mason. Maybe Tushar, you want to go first, and then we'll go to Ashish. Mason, please introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bhairaj. Hi, everyone. I'm Tushar. I'm a co-founder and president at Relevo. I wear the CPO CTO hats here. And my journey, I started my journey in the dot-com days, and I've sort of built and scaled businesses from the ground up in early stage, growth stage, as well as large companies. So I've seen sort of the journey of how products and platforms get built, scaled, and what is a winning strategy. So I'll bring perspective from those lenses.
Super. Thank you. Ashish, you want to go next?
Sure thing. I'm a co-founder CEO at Relevo with Tushar. We've been on this journey together. And I've come at this problem from the CMO, VP of marketing, CRO perspective. I've played that role at a host of companies like Apptio, Skilljar, and Parity. And really, our solution is all about relevance. And that's the lens that we'll be having this conversation around, which is how can you combine PLG and ABM or go with just ABM based on what's relevant to the people that you're trying to reach.
Super. Thank you so much. Mason.
Hi, I'm Mason Cosby, founder of a company called Scrappy ABM. We are the only ABM enablement organization that helps people build their first program in the ABM, first ABM program. So excited to be here. Again, background is more in the vertical SaaS and actual agency space. So I come at it through the lens of, if you know exactly who you should be going after, why would you do anything else? Sure, you can actually have more people enter into your product and waste your team's time with support tickets, or you can actually go for those that you know will be the highest profit clients. So I don't have any firm opinions on why you should run ABM, but it's probably going to be ABM.
Okay, let's go into that. And you know, thanks for taking the pole position, Mason. We'll see whether we settle it down to, you know, what you want to get there. Let me start with maybe a basic concept overview. You know, maybe for the audience who's, especially for early stage startups who may not necessarily know the difference between what it takes to build a PLG machine versus an ABM machine. Let me ask this question, you know, could one of you define what is PLG? And, you know, maybe Ashish, do you want to talk about what is a PLG motion? And, you know, touch a little bit about is it really a marketing-driven motion versus a product or a sales-driven motion? And then Mason, we'll go to you next. You know, if you could define what is ABM.
Sure thing. So I'll take sort of the extreme position on PLG, which is, I don't think is the standard vision or the standard approach anymore. But 2 or 3 years ago, there was this view that the product could do it all. Like product-led growth was enough for you as a company. The point being, if you introduced your product to the right set of people, to the right set of buyers, users, what have you, there would have to be no human interaction needed. They would come in, they would discover your product, they would get value from the product, they would buy in the product, they would upgrade in the product. And that was really the genesis of the product-led growth movement. A lot of companies did this right, like the Canvas of the world. Dropbox probably was the very first example. Box was an example as well. And again, the whole idea being you don't really need sellers, or it's at least not a seller first motion. It's a motion where people discover your product, use your product, get value, and then you monetize them once they've derived some value from the product. That's probably the easiest way to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as an ABM program, the simple definition is an account-based marketing program is a revenue program that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success around a set of shared target accounts. And to dig a little bit deeper into that, that set of shared target accounts should actually come through not just these are the best people that are highly engaged in our content, or they're not just people that fly through our pipelines. They're not just the easy customers to work with. I actually go to the extreme of actually talking to our CFOs and actually asking from a profitability perspective, who are the clients that are the highest grossing clients? Like when I think about profit, generally profit means that these people have gotten significant value. They've stuck around for a really long time. They actually love working with us. And they're like, you have already solved so many great problems for us. Do you have more problems you can help us solve? Because there's already trust established. So when I look at it through that lens, ideally, you look at your top 20 most profitable clients, figure out the trends within those and say, those are people we're going to serve. Those are who we're going to go after. And you go get more and more and more of those kinds of customers. So again, ABM is just a revenue strategy. It's not a marketing. It's not sales. It's not customer success. It's a revenue strategy that aligns marketing, sales, and CS around a set of shared target accounts.
Okay, got it. Looks like there's quite a few people on LinkedIn who are not able to connect. Team, could you, audience, if you're able to still see us, can you just give us a thumbs up? Are we back live? Okay, looks like we might be live. At least I got one comment. All right, so that's good. So thanks, Mason, for, you know, maybe starting it off. Maybe let's start from a very early stage startup. You know, I think this debate about purely product-led or purely ABM, you know, has been going the rounds on LinkedIn quite a bit. Maybe let me build a small case, right? So we have an early stage startup who may not necessarily have an account market fit yet, or even a product market fit yet. So they don't have their products deployed at, you know, enough places, enough customers to be able to tell that they have a product market fit yet or not. In those situations, is PLG the right strategy, or should they go with, I think, Mason, as you talked about, maybe take a few accounts, not necessarily you know, high value accounts. You don't yet know what's the value. So should you go pick a specific set of accounts and then jump in, or should you be able to go ahead and say, hey, I'm going to go build this and, you know, do like a spray and pray model and do some, you know, outbound marketing, email marketing to go connect to potentially about 100, 200 accounts rather than a small list of maybe 5 or 10. You know, what are your thoughts? Should we maybe just go around the table quickly? Maybe Mason, as you start on the last one, why don't you start on this one?
Yeah, I think if we're talking about early stage startup that does not yet have established product market fit, the first question would be, what kind of SaaS company are you? Are you a problem specific SaaS company that's solving for kind of a universal problem that's pretty standard across multiple businesses? For example, HubSpot has a great PLG motion. They are not necessarily specific to any one vertical. They're very problem specific. Whereas we have quite a few early stage clients that I would say are vertical specific, meaning they were purpose built to work exclusively with one vertical. An example is we have a client that is a utilities manufacturing compliance software specific to those that run utilities in the government space. They have a total of 500 potential accounts. That's it. That's our entire total addressable market. So why would you do anything else besides ABM when you only have 500 viable accounts? So the first question is it problem specific? Because I'll give you a quick example. Scrappy ABM is actually an early stage startup. We're about 16 months in. We're actually a problem specific organization. Dirty little secret. We don't run ABM for ourselves because we don't have enough data to say these are our top 20%. We just know we solve a great problem for a lot of people. And now we're starting to kind of have enough data to then say these are our great fit accounts. Whereas again, if you're purpose built for a specific vertical, why would you run anything else? So that's the first thing to think through. If you are problem specific, I like ABM through the lens of expediting a hunch. So for an example, we thought we worked super well with service-based businesses. So what did I do? I went and I closed a bunch of service-based businesses. And what did I find out? Kind of hit or miss for us. There's not a consistency in that business model. So what I did through an account-based program is expedite the validation of product market fit. Now, if you can go into it knowing this is to expedite the validation of a hunch, and that's a win, awesome. But if you're in an early stage startup and your CEO goes to your marketing manager and says, I need you to build an ABM program, it's going to generate 5X pipeline that'll close at 40%. And if you can't do that, you're failed. Probably not a great fit. So that's the thought process. ABM is a great fit for vertical specific. And if you're problem specific, it's a great fit to expedite the validation of product market fit.
Got it. So which means maybe to summarize it, if you are a vertical SaaS company, it might be, you know, the right idea to start with ABM And PLG may or may not be a fit to you at all, right? If specifically if your audience size is going to be in hundreds or max thousands, right? So over the scale of a couple of years, you might be able to cover all of them. That's what it is. Don't start with PLG, start with ABM, right? So that's the essence. So Tushar and Ashish, do you have a different opinion?
Okay, if I can go first. Sure, I think that's one angle. There's also the angle of who you're really going after. Like, what is their sales motion look like? Like, can you just put the product out there and expect people to use it, adopt it, deploy it, and start getting value on a consistent basis? Or do you need a slightly more involved sales motion? You have multiple stakeholders and things like that. So that's sort of the external view. The internal view also is like, what is it that you're building? Like, is it a tool? Does it lend itself to self-service? Is there some amount of lift involved or integrations involved or some sort of initial setup, non-trivial sort of setup that doesn't lend itself to self-service? Like, then you have this other challenge, like how much can you really simplify for a user to pick it up? Any of that user picks it up, like, is that the user who's going to also be the buyer that you're going to close deals with? If not, like, those two angles play into sort of what you want to start with as well. In addition to what Mason said.
So you're agreeing that if you're a vertical you're a vertical, you know, SaaS product, in that case, whatever Mason says, you're agreeing to it, go after ABM. But if you have a slightly bigger market size, then you're suggesting that, hey, you could potentially think about it. Is that what your position would be?
I'm actually proposing two other dimensions. So Mason talked about the vertical specific and non-vertical specific. I'm proposing two other dimensions, which is like, what is the buying process or buying journey in your target market, right? Vertical or not, vertical specific or not. And what is the product adoption cycle, right? And does it lend itself to self-service upfront? Like, you know, because you have to strike a balance between like how much do you want to build before you actually go out and test whether it's useful and for whom it's useful, right? And you don't want, if early stage startup, you don't want to spend 2 years making it fully self-service before you put it out there and try to figure out if there's somebody for whom this is useful, right? So, and you know, in the early stages, like if you're building a more complex solution, it may not lend itself to like self-service upfront if your goal is to try and validate the market, right? Over time, it might. So it's also like, you know, that angle is what I'm trying to...
Got it. Yeah, so...
Spot on. Good, Raj, if I can chime in, I think...
Please do.
The hypothesis point is beautiful, right? You start with... Every startup starts with a hypothesis, a hunch, as Mason called it. The second point that Tushar is... What Tushar talked about, two or three points. And second is, what kind of company do you want to be? Right. So you have a problem. You have a problem you're going after. How do you want to solve for that problem? Part of it is who are you selling to and how do they typically buy that product that you're building? And then a related piece is how much do you want to charge for it? So for example, if you're an early stage startup, if you're going after six-figure deals and a couple of six-figure deals are more than enough for you to get to the next stage, PLG is clearly not the motion you want to go with. ABM is the motion you want to go with. So it's really thinking about, are you plankton? Are you hunting plankton? Are you hunting deer? Are you hunting woolly mammoths or whatever, elephants? And based on that, then you can figure out what's the right motion to go after this. A part of it is also dev-focused products typically tend to do better on the PLG side. It's really hard to get the attention of developers using just marketing because they're skeptical and they say, no, I need to get my hands on this thing before I even evaluate it. So that's one other thing to consider, which is it goes to Tushar's point. What's the buying motion? What's the evaluation process in this whole thing?
Got it. So if you're saying that, you know, if the buyer is a dev or a buyer is a very specific persona, if you will, regardless of which, you know, whether it's a vertical buyer or a horizontal buyer, if that buyer's behavior is going to be a lot more of self-service, right? And typically developers prefer that self-service motion, regardless of, you know, whether the market size of 500 is the case or not, right? That's what Mason might say. In that case, you know, you're saying that self-service motion would be a good place to start with, but then add, you know, layer ABM, you know, to essentially enable selling these users, if you will, if I can differentiate between the users and the buyers. The users might want to go ahead and try things out by themselves, but use ABM mechanics to sell them or sell them big. Is that what, you know, Ashish, you're saying?
Exactly right. If you, just to build on the last point, if you're selling something that costs $20 a month, $50 a month, $100 a month, even $1,000 a month, potentially up to, somebody could put down their credit card and buy it. But if it's beyond that, highly unlikely that anybody has a credit card with that kind of limit that they want to put down for your product. So you have to think about that technical consideration. It's also, in a lot of cases, the users may not be the buyers. So PLG might be a part of the story where you cannot get any account penetration till you get some people using the product. Then you need to figure out how to get to the CIO or CTO or VP of product or what have you. So the answer, unfortunately, like in most things, good things in life, is it depends.
It depends.
But you have to be, don't fall in love with terminology. Don't fall in love with motion. Figure out what you're trying to solve for first. And then based on these dimensions, figure out, should you layer in PLG, start with PLG, or start with ABM, right? Some combination of the three.
Okay, well, let's get into some controversies here. So Mason took a pole position of ABM and ABM only. So maybe Mason, could you maybe voice your opinion about what happens in such a situation where the users and the buyers are, you know, are vastly different? You know, most times they are. ABM motions target essentially a top-down selling motion. You're targeting very specific decision makers, very specific stakeholders. You're building personalized campaigns towards them. That's very different than, you know, what Ashish is mentioning about, or Ashish and Tushar both are mentioning. If the users want to go self-serve and try things by themselves, no matter how much you, you know, try to sell from the top, it may or may not necessarily work. What do you have to say for that?
Yeah, I think the first piece is, as someone that runs a company called Scrappy ABM, I love being the benefit of a PLG motion because I get access to a lot of tools for free that I then never end up actually buying.
Yeah.
And I then also turn my clients onto those things and they never actually end up buying it either. So again, I love the charity of VCs and PE firms to really help me build my business without me ever paying them. So if, again, I love how some of these non or for-profit businesses are running as nonprofits. It makes my life a lot easier. So again, if you want to continue to run like that, I highly recommend continuing with the PLG motion. That said, if you want to make money, as much as I love the ability to get hands-on, it depends on the end user. So we've referenced this idea of a technical buyer. One of the things that's a challenge as you mature your organization is IT and security come into play. So I understand that, yes, it'd be great to get hands-on experience, but inevitably people don't want to share their data through a PLG motion because there's no non-disclosure agreements in place. So if you're actually trying to sell to people that can make you money in the long term, at a certain point, PLG no longer becomes a viable option because of the lack of actual product sophistication that can be shared through a PLG motion. I've actually seen it become more damaging because they try to show a hands-on experience, which then actually misconstrues what the real value is because they don't have the appropriate level of information and data that is accessed through a PLG motion. So you turn someone on to the idea of it, they get hands-on, they're like, ah, it's not what I actually need it to be. When in reality, it is, they just haven't set it up appropriately because they can't until they buy it. So as a result, you've now actually turned a buyer away when in reality, you could have shared great demo experiences that are ungated, true product walkthroughs that give the exact same semblance of a PLG motion, but with actual data flowing through enough to pique their interest so your seller can actually guide them through the process of implementation. So again, yes, if you want to run a charity, by all means, continue to run a PLG motion. Thank you. You make my life easier. If you want to make money, I recommend ABM.
Maybe let's talk about that. So we had two vectors, right? The first vector was vertical versus horizontal. The second vector was buyer versus user. Maybe let's talk about time to sale and as another vector. So I think, Mason, you brought up a point about if you want to make money, go ABM. Could you explain a little bit about the money aspect of it? There's both, you know, maybe if you could touch upon the spend versus the ROI, you know, on that spend.
So again, the beauty of an ABM program is you're very intentional until you actually bring into the product and the organization. So one of the things that we don't talk about often are the hidden costs of infrastructure on PLG. So again, you're bringing in many more users, which adds infrastructure complexities, and depending on the kind of customer experience you may want to provide, you either have to invest a ton of time into self-service documentation and enablement that then allows your PLG users to actually self-serve their own problems, or you need to invest in customer support reps, because again, at the end of the day, the goal of PLG is to inevitably expand them. Well, if they have a sucky experience from the very beginning, they're not going to expand anyway. Whereas with an account-based marketing program, you say, we know these are our best fit potential customers. You give them a white glove experience from beginning to end. Yes, it is a longer sales cycle because you're going after higher deal values and lower deal volumes, generally speaking. Whereas again, PLG motion, you get them in the product and then you do an upsell approach that is likely still an outbound seller that has a PQL as a product qualified lead versus an MQL. And the PQL is just an outbound motion still, and you're trying to upsell them. So like, you kind of did something different, but it's still just a glorified MQL that has product experience that's probably subpar from the actual paid version of the product. And then they come in with preconceived notions. So again, I think if done well, PLG can work. I just haven't seen it done super well in a lot of cases.
Maybe I'll talk about that. Maybe I'll talk about where I have seen PLG. This is interesting. We're an ABM company, so we're actually on Mason's side in a lot of things that he's talking about. That being said, I'll take I'll play devil's advocate just to keep things spicy. I'll tell you about cases where I have seen PLG work, and Tushar, I'm sure, has some examples on this. If you're spinning off of an open source product, so let's say that there's an existing community, somebody's using a piece of open source software, but they're struggling to do specific things related to that open source piece of software. To me, it's all about reducing the amount of friction in user acquisition. If you have a community, if they have a problem and you can solve that problem and you don't need to hire sellers to get the interest going, and you can charge 20, 50, 100, whatever, $500 and get a bunch of people paying that kind of money. I have many examples of companies that have raised Series A's and seed funding and are cash flow positive on the basis of something like that. But remember what I'm doing here. What I'm saying is you basically need to have a community. You know already who your buyers are. You've got something that solves problems for those buyers. In that case, PLG might be a really good place to get started. And I've seen it work relatively well. And again, we're talking about this in a B2B context. In the B2C context, I think that's a whole different set of considerations that I want to touch with a tentpole. So that's how I would, and you know, it's not, PLG versus ABM is not something you decide when you're about to go to market. If you're doing that, you're doing it wrong. It's something you decide when you're starting the company, when you're building your product, when you're building, it's something that comes super early. There's this joke about the biggest difference between first-time founders and second-time founders is the second-time founders do go to market first and then build the product around it. And I think that's the lesson you should take away from this is figure out how are people going to pay for this and then architect everything else based on that.
Yeah, you know, that's very good. So second-time founders are usually about distribution rather than just the product. I'm noticing there's a couple of things that Mason said, and then Ashish, you kind of corroborated towards that. Let me kind of repeat that in a slightly different way. I think what Mason is advocating is that there is a large overhead to have the PLG being set up in the right way. To even make it work, right? So, you know, I think previously, Mason, you talked about they might not be analytics. You might just have a free trial, but, you know, the user goes away. You have no idea who the buyer is. You can't reach out to them. You can't reach out to the users. Boom, the account is gone. So essentially, the analytics is a big driver. There's also an aspect of making transparent pricing. So essentially, the overhead on engineering and product is so big that you may not necessarily have to wait for 6 months, 12 months time to go enable all of that overhead, which is why probably, Mason, you're saying start with ABM so you can start closing very quickly and then, you know, get down to the roots of it that, hey, you can scale it, you know, maybe potentially add PLG as a motion over time. But I think, Ashish, what you're saying is it's the DNA of the company itself, right? Is your product thought about that, hey, you want to scale so damn rapidly. Maybe you are a prosumer company like Canva, Miro, right? Pretty much all of the, you know, newer go from price escalation from individual to teams to enterprise. Anytime there's that kind of a motion, PLG would work, you know, will probably work wonders. But this aspect of the PLG readiness, and that takes time and effort, versus go to the market very quickly with ABM. That's the debate in a sense. And I think what Ashish, you're saying is that, you know, that debate is too late. You know, if you're in the market, if you already built out the product, you should essentially resolve that in your head by enabling your product, you know, to go the PLG route or the SLG route. Once you go that particular route, there's no turning back to it. Right? Is that what I understand from what you guys are saying?
At least for early stage startups. Yeah. I'm sure Tushar has something to say on it. So actually, Tushar, why don't you go ahead and then I'll chime in after you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll echo some of what Ashish is saying here, right? I mean, it's full disclosure again, as Ashish said, like we are using AI to reimagine ABM, right? So we're not going to argue against what Mishan is saying from that lens, right? But having said that, there's resource and overhead in any motion that you pick, right? There's of different kinds, right? Which is why like doing both is very resource incentive. So you should pick which one, like especially if you're early stage. The other thing we should also say is like, it's not a good idea to go build the product first and then figure out which motion you're going to take later, right? So that's not how early stage come. Like it should all be built in tandem. And what is the goal? What are you really solving for? Is like, hey, are we solving the right problem for the right audience? And are we solving it the right way, right? And what is the motion that's going to help you learn that the fastest, right? Because that's in the very early stage, like that's the goal, right? Once you have found like, hey, you're solving a very important problem for a particular segment of the market, and then your solution emerges, then you have a lot more information in terms of, okay, what's the best way to for growth, for scaling this, right? If you figured out that your target market and your buyer and your users are, you know, the best way to go and grow your share of wallet is the Canva or, you know, the Dropbox, like those kind of ways and go viral and get drive adoption that way and both learn as well as scale your revenue, that's a good path, right? Or if not, if you're like, hey, no, I have, you know, certain deal sizes, there's a buyer motion that's complex. We're not just going to be able to grow viral no matter how great we make our UX and so on and so forth. Then it lends itself to a motion that, you know, and it's again, product and go to market iterating on that. And that's what I guess Ashish was getting to. You have to sort of have a hypothesis on what your problem, buyer and solution is going to be so that you can iterate not just on the hypothesis of the problem and solution, but also the hypothesis of which motion you're going to use as you grow. And that's baked in because from a product lens, like you have to build in the features and the packaging and the pricing and all of that, the onboarding, all of that needs to get built in. It's not an afterthought either way. Right. So I think money can be made both ways, but it depends on certain things. It has both sort of product and go-to-market implications. It has to be thought through very deeply and also potentially rethought as you go along.
If I may hop in, I just Googled what are the conversion rates from PLG to customer. Free accounts to paid accounts are 9% conversions, and free trials to PQLs are 25% conversion rates. So again, if you want to help 75% of people that are not even qualified, I think PLG is awesome. If you want to help your right fit exact buyers and have efficiency, that's why I love ABM. Because with ABM, you actually see an increase in conversions of 78% pipeline growth, 77% satisfaction with the sales team, 74% increase in revenue, 7% increase in overall brand awareness within your right fit target accounts. So again, based on the data that we're seeing from companies like Itzma, I like ABM for making money.
Yeah, I mean, that's a key. I'll second that, which is, not everybody that's going to use your product is going to buy. So if you're, what's the hypothesis you're validating? Right? Are you validating the hypothesis that that majority of your users are going to convert to paying buyers? Or is your hypothesis that a lot of people will use anything for free, but it's, you know, when people start to pay money, good money, Ashish made the point about deal size, right? And if that's the conversion you're concerned about, then that's the hypothesis you need to validate, and you know, PLG motion may not give you the right signals to validate that hypothesis.
Well said. It's really where are you in the journey, right? To Sean's point, are you trying to figure out some early answers, or do you have some data that you can look at, and then you're trying to figure out how do I scale this data from here on out? And there are different considerations at those two stages. In that first stage, it depends on the nature of the product, but if you're doing six-figure deals, the account-based approach is a much better way of validating your hypothesis because you can have cohorts, right? You can be like, it's either this or this or this. These three use cases, let's go find people that fit those three use cases and then rule people in or out. On the other hand, PLG, and I'm generalizing to be controversial, a lot of times people have built something and are like, I think this is valuable, but I don't know where it can be used. PLG is a good way of floating that trial balloon to see what shows up on your doorstep. I would not recommend building a company like that, but hey, Plenty of companies have started that way and ended up becoming huge. So you make your own decisions. It's just not something as a go-to-market person that I feel comfortable doing.
Yeah, and also like to Ashish's comment about stage, like PLG has roles to play in different stages of the journey. Like, for example, if you've hit a market and you believe like that's the market, you figure out the sales motion, so on and so forth, right? And you have an ABM motion that's going and that's converting. But then you're like, I see this plateauing at a certain point, and I think my solution is also valuable to these other segments, right? Now, this other segment that you may want to expand into, like that approach may or may not work. So you may want to have some early hypothesis of like, hey, for this segment, like for example, either lower down or a different buyer for which is this is applicable, a PLG motion actually might be a great way to either test some hypothesis, get some early data, or even have a motion that accelerates your penetration in that segment. Like, so there's clearly a role to play in those situations, but I'll go back to what Ashish said in the very beginning, which is the right answer is always it depends.
Yeah.
And we're trying to piece apart like what does it depend on? It depends on these things.
Yeah. So I think the case studies came out of the last maybe couple of years were mostly prosumer ones, right? Where you put your product out there, you know, very likely put it on Product Hunt, AI or design studios, or convert from text to audio, audio to video, whole bunch of other, you know, these small set of use cases wherein, hey, try it, I like it, I'm going to go maybe $9 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, I latch onto it, and then keep on building upon it. There's definitely a motion for that, right? So there's a B2C, kind of a B2B, you know, somewhere in between, that's the case. But I think what Mason is trying to get to is, you know, there's a readiness aspect of ABM, which might be much more faster than the readiness aspect of the PLG. And it's also a DNA equation. So I haven't seen, for example, I haven't seen many healthcare products or financial B2B products, or for that matter, cybersecurity products to be very PLG-centric. They may talk about PLG-centric, you know, but it's very rare. Sneak and, you know, some of them have done that well because they were going after the developers. But typical cloud security products, which were like Wiz, that's the big name in town these days, Palo Alto, CrowdStrike, Zscaler, none of them were PLG. None of them are still PLG, right? Any big ones like Salesforce, that's not PLG. You know, they've tried to add self-service, but they never could or never have gotten to it. It's still very complex to go set up. So Salesforce is not PLG. Salesforce is ABM first. ServiceNow is not PLG. It's still ABM first. So there's that debate about, hey, if you have a very complex product, it takes a lot more time to go set up, regardless of the audience, whether they prefer to buy it, you know, in the way that you want it or not, ABM is still the right way to do it. So, you know, coming back to, let's maybe talk a little bit about how, right? If ABM has to be done well, what's the readiness that's needed? We'll start with some very basics. Maybe, you know, Ashish or Mason, you want to maybe start from the very top. You know?
Mason, please.
Okay, I know, Mason, you went a little about starting with a list and then going after them. So maybe could you expand a little bit about how do you get to that list? How do you reach out to them? Who do you reach out to them? What motions, what tools? Let's get in the weeds of it.
Yeah, so before we get into some of the weeds of the actual building of a list, I think for quick context, when you think about go-to-market maturity, I don't know if anybody has read Sangram and Brian Brown's book, MOVE, which is the four-step go-to-market framework. But they have three stages of go-to-market maturity. One of them is problem market fit, which we've talked about a lot already. The next is product market fit. So again, for most companies considering ABM, you need to have established product market fit. So as a starting point for your list, it's who is our viable market? So again, if you are a problem-specific organization like Scrappy ABM, where we solve the problem of getting your first ABM program off the ground, we have a couple of cohorts that we've seen that are performing very well for us that are actually a mix of hardware software companies. I don't know why. We're digging into that data, but like when it's both hardware and software, our programs have outperformed other programs with other kinds of businesses. So that's the starting point is, okay, how do we find more companies? that are matching this same approach from a business model perspective. Now let's get into obviously revenue ranges. Like, can they even afford our products? Like, are they at a stage where this makes sense for them? Let's also look at internal team structure potentially, because most of us have a service or a product and someone has to use that product or partner with us in order to execute the service. So, you know, let's look at the internal team structure. Let's also look at potentially technographics. I love technographics, not just for the abilities around integrations and whole host of other things, but also people buy based on the brands that present. So I have found personally, I like working with companies that use HubSpot. That's just there's a psychographic component that HubSpot attracts different kinds of buyers than other CRMs. So I tend to work better with people that use HubSpot. It's not a universal, but if I'm going to be really honed in and specific, I'm going to continue to stack the deck in favor of those technographics, team structure, verticals, or business models. Those are all different thought processes. And again, looking back at our finance teams and understanding profitability per client and profitability per service line, to then say, based on these service lines or these product lines with these kinds of customers, we see this dramatic increase in profit, and identifying the top 20% of those, and then saying, based on that 20%, amazing. Now we need to go find a subset of people that match these trend lines. And again, it's firmographics, it's team structure, it's technographics. And then to the best of your ability, doing some account level research to understand psychographics, to understand more of, are they, like, a lot of people are really public now, like very public. Like, I hired an executive assistant. They found my daughter's birthday, my wife's birthday, my wedding anniversary as like a test project. Like, I live so publicly that you could figure out a lot about me and how I think and buy. So then you can understand the psychographics within the executive buying committee to understand what are their priorities. So again, you start with this list and then you do further research to the nuance it. And people are like, man, that sounds like a lot of work. It is. That's why ABM is hard. And like, that's why there's so many great tools that are coming up that are like, we can make it easier. But like, at the end of the day, if you identify who your best fit customers are and you do actual research on them and you get really personalized and specific, you almost, when you look at the list, you're like, golly, we could really help these people. And you get passionate about it. You get fired up. You're like, we have to go out to them. We have to help them because we know our product is that impactful for them. And then you don't feel bad about outbounding to them. You're spreading the message that they need your help and you can help them. So again, that's the thought process. Start at firmographics. Start at, then go into technographics. Then go into profitability to understand who are our most profitable clients. And then move into your psychographics. And again, the best way to do this once you've got your list is like gut check with your sales team, gut check with your CS team, gut check with your finance team. And actually, oh, that's the other thing. Look in your CS platform. See who has the most complaints. Like, see who is the noisiest, squeakiest wheel. You don't want more of those. You want less of those that get value, that understand your product, that see the value in it overall. So again, sorry, that was my like soapbox on how to actually build out your target account list. But if you truly pull all this information together, and again, there are many, many tools that are up and coming that are helping you with ICP identification, that is not just to look back at your closed won deals for the past 3 months, but it's actually truly looking also at psychographics and using AI modeling to truly pull together a comprehensive ICP approach. If you do that, you get fired up and you go out and you actually help a lot of people. So that's how I'd go through. And if you can buy in from sales, CS, marketing, finance, and your executive team, which is really hard, you've got a great list of target accounts that you could go and pursue.
Okay, let me maybe ask a clarifying question on that. When do you start this? You know, you mentioned about, sure enough, creating a list, running firmography, geography, psychography, whole bunch of other things on it. See how
great they buy, question.
All of that. When do you start this? Do you start when you hit
if you're
a product market fit or earlier than that?
If you're vertical specific, I would start day one of just, ideally, if you're building a product, you've actually done some market research beforehand. So I'm going to go ahead and state that like, you've probably done some form of market testing just from a research perspective. And for like when I launched Scrappy ABM, I met with 50 people and just said, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Like, does this resonate? And 10 of them actually became customers. So like that kind of product market fit, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Very cool. So like you're doing some kind of research, hopefully. And then from there, again, that's if you're vertical specific. Now, if you're problem specific, you're actually probably starting with some form of a wide net because you don't know who you best serve. You know, you solve a viable problem, you figure out who you solve that problem for, and then we kind of have conversations on a monthly basis. So if we look at our customer base and we're kind of doing health scoring on all of our customers, and we're seeing who's consistently in green and who's always getting value, who's really appreciative of us, who's really thanking us, who's actually consistently not just maintaining, but actually saying, I'd like to do more with you. How do we get more support from you guys or more help from you guys? We want to pay you for that. You start to take notice of those trends as you build the business. And then you identify what are the consistencies within these customers? What are the trends? And then you can extrapolate that. So again, if you're vertical specific, it's kind of day one. And that day one looks like identifying your total addressable market, which you should do, and you get really specific. And then if you're problem specific, you know, you may have a total addressable market, but I kind of think that those are a joke. It's like, we could serve this 100,000 companies with a $1 billion market cap. And it's like, nah, not really. But again, as you then build out the services or the product, you understand the trends, and then you end up being able to say, these are the consistencies. Let's go build a program around these consistencies, understanding that this is a hypothesis that we're using ABM to validate. And once we validated it, we may actually specifically niche down and really invest some more time and content around how do we serve this audience best.
One last question before I move to Ashish and Tushar. Any tools that you could suggest, for especially the newer startups who are logging in? Is it more like AI SDR kind of tool sets or something different?
I'm going to be really honest. You're asking the guy that runs a company called Scrappy ABM. So I actually am in a rebellion against tools as a starting point. I think if you have a CRM and a group of smart people and you can just actually identify within your current data sets, what are the trends? That's the starting point for most people. Now, if you've got VC backing, again, there's a ton of up and coming tools, things like Solutions Out of a Box, FYIGTM. Goodness gracious, there's a ton that if you just go do some basic research, like even any data enrichment platform that's going to help you to validate, hey, we think this is a right fit, but like, is there a viable enough market here? That's how I'd go about doing it. But again, you need a CRM. You need the ability to have internal conversations that get you started and on the right track. And then you build programming to validate the hypothesis. And if it works, awesome. If it doesn't, you figure out why, and then you move on or you go again.
Got it. Okay. Let me maybe move to Ashish and Tushar. I know you guys are building Relevo, and your primary purpose is that every message that needs to be sent to an ABM contact, especially for a lead gen, has to be personalized. So maybe could you expand a little bit about the importance of AI in this particular space and how ABM is changing quite a bit, because of that?
Sure thing. So I'll build actually what off of something that Mason shared, which is the ICP is the your ideal customer profile is the most valuable framework for you to think about, irrespective of whether you're going the ABM route or the PLG route. You should start there. And it's important from a company-wide perspective, not just a go-to-market, because if you have a finely, granularly enough, defined enough ICP, and Mason talked about all the mistakes that people make. You ask people, what's your ICP? They'll say something like SaaS, US-based SaaS companies. And my reaction is exactly the same reaction as Mason's, which is like, that is not your ICP. That's maybe your TAM. But even that's way too broad. So you need a finely defined ICP that's based on not just firmographic criteria, how big is the company, where is it based, technographic criteria, what kinds of technology solutions are they using today, but use cases, challenges, and buying triggers. When you have a definition of an ICP based on those five things, you build the right thing, then you go sell the right thing, and you go upsell, renew, whatever, the right thing also. So this is a framework that's used across not just your go-to-market functions like sales, marketing, and CS, but product as well. Because it happens all the time that sales and marketing come up with a value prop that's actually not what the product is building for, especially in an early stage. So you have to be lockstep. And if the lockstep mechanism is by focusing on who you're serving and not who you are, it's defining who you are on the basis of who you're serving and what problem you're serving, solving for that particular customer. And in that context, relevance matters way more than personalization, which is you could send somebody an email saying, oh, you worked at this company, blah, 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 or you're in this geo, or you went to this college. Okay, kind of creepy. What works way better is notice that you're trying to solve this particular problem. We can solve this problem. The problem, challenge, or whatever you're doing to make life easier for the person you're selling to is the bridge between that company and you. And that's the process we make, we simplify for you. That's where also AI can be a game changer in combination with getting the right data from the different data sources. To Mason's point, you need to do a lot of research to figure this out. Most companies, not only do they not have the time, they don't have the people to do this research either. And it's a lot of work for any one human being to do. Even if they have 50 accounts, to stay on top of them takes a fair amount of work that most humans just don't want to do. So we strongly suspect, and we're seeing proof, that automation is only a part of the story. It's really process change is what AI is driving. And, you know, Tushar, I'm sure we'll build on that. But that's sort of our observation.
Yeah, Pasvan, I'll add a couple of things there. So all of those things are hard, right? I mean, to actually stay on top of what's happening in the accounts that you've even narrowed on. But what actually also makes it more complex is the fact that all of this information is constantly changing, right? Market trends change, competitive set changes, as macro events and things like that. So it's not a static thing. Let's say you define your ICP today, a couple of quarters down the road, like that may not be the same ICP you want to be working with as the jumping off point for ABM motion. So that's number one. The number two thing is you talked about like the stage of the journey, and Mason talked about like the problem market fit and product market fit. What we've seen in our journey is like the good time to scale ABM is when you found product market fit. Like, you know, you have a very good idea about your ICP, and then you can frame that, and we give you a framework to capture that, and that everything sort of indexes off of that in terms of your segmentation, targeting, prioritization, messaging, all of that. But what if you're wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if you've not really hit your, you're wrong about your hypothesis of your ICP? Then you necessarily have to go and revisit that, either where the market's changing or you're wrong, right? Which means you may think you have product market fit, you probably don't, right? You have problem market fit. And we see that in our customers as well. And our solution works really well when people do have a good, strong hypothesis, and we're able to show them that repeated value and scale that out, and then keep them up to date because we have a learning engine. That's also to your question, where does AI play in? AI plays in a role where we're constantly learning from what the customer is doing and what's working, what's not. And based on that, you can keep iterating at a rapid pace versus just, you know, randomly throwing darts or doing anecdotal data. And if you realize you really haven't hit product market fit, you can also use this mechanism to iterate faster, to process that data faster, get those learnings faster, to keep tweaking your ICP till you get to your target market and then scale it out, right? But a lot of early stage companies probably don't have the runway or the patience to actually go through that iterative journey. They're very keen to sort of, let's 5x our pipeline. Well, if you don't have product market fit, like, there's nothing anybody outside of your company that can do to 5x your pipeline. Starting with a good hypothesis, then leveraging AI to automate all of these dynamically changing elements in your universe that you need to get right, it can solve that for you and have a continuous learning motion, which not just gets you there, but also keeps you there on a continuous basis.
No, got it. So maybe talking about AI, maybe we can stretch that a little bit here. Can AI help in, you know, maybe three or four levels? I think, you know, Mason started off, you know, talking about a couple of things, right? You know, let's say there are three levels. The first level is finding who might be the right fit, finding a set of companies who might be a right fit. You know, is there any AI in it? I doubt it. It's very likely it's just set of filters using Apollo or various other lead gen tools, right? But what do you guys think? Is there any AI in it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's how you do it, right? Like, let's say you have, how many accounts can your team go after in a given quarter, right? If you want to go after 10,000 accounts, like, you can get there using filters. But if you want to go after your top 100 accounts, like, you can't get there using the filters on tools that you mentioned, yeah. Right? That's where what Ashish talked about is you have to define your ICP more holistically rather than, say, the firmographics or technographics in terms of like employee size or geo or things like that. You have to look at trends of you know, hiring changes, or have they made a right. recent announcement? Have right. they had a security breach? Things like that, which are very dynamic, but it's a needle in the haystack. It's hard to find. Like, that's where AI can sift through massive amounts of data to then find you that needle in the haystack. So you can go from your 20,000 accounts down to your top 50.
I think your primary premise is that you still need a list of accounts. you bring all of the data and you run some kind of a Gen AI or some kind of a summarization on filtering that, not using the traditional filter lists like Apollo has or, you know, any other ZoomInfo, those will have, but use AI to be able to go and say, hey, what are the use cases? What are the pain points? Have they, you know, have they talked about it? Have they visited your website? I mean, we're talking about all of these signals to be able to say, you know, reduce it from 10,000 to 500 and then,
right,
and then use that list and personalize some kind of messaging to them. Is that what you're saying? So the list is
it's at multiple levels. To your point, like what are the levels, right? So at the highest level, it's how do you come up with an ICP quickly? Because a lot of customers that we work, they don't actually know what their ICP is. So we help. So we have AI powered automation that helps them figure out, get there first, right? And then use that to say, okay, if this is our ICP, then use an AI agent to basically go figure out what signals can we find that match your ICP. And that narrows down and then have a scoring model with high, what matters is a high level of accuracy and coverage. You can't just, you know, throw something at it. If it's like 50, 60% accuracy, it's like, it can't be used. It's not usable, right? But then you have to find the strength of the matches, number of matches and whatnot, and actually come up with a prioritization model, right? So that's at that level. But then what do you do after that? Mason's point, if it's a verticalized approach, you have a fixed set of fixed TAM. But if it's not, and you're going after a broad market, you need some way to segment that market, right? So that's the next level of where AI can help you. What are the possible segments that you can go after off the accounts that you have shortlisted, right? Because it's a segmented and targeted approach that you want to take. After that comes, okay, now you know what segments you're going after, but what is the targeted personalized campaigns that you want to run against those segments? And then comes, what are the assets? Message is one of them. Like, so that's the levels. Okay. Ashish may have more to add on that.
Okay. So is the problem here in how to get started on ABM? Is it to go identify how to do all of these things, you know, and stitch them together? Maybe that's the big part of it, right? So figuring this out, stitching them together and running this even at a scale of 50 or 100 a week, you know, it will take an effort, you know, to get something of this sort. Any thoughts? You know, are there any playbooks that's available? Any things that you guys can recommend? I know Mason's nodding his head and looks like he's like, hey, you know, just deploy people, not tools.
Well, the hard thing often is you end up with a lot of wasted effort when you don't have a strong point of view on who you're helping how, right? The more loosely defined that is, the more work you end up doing. But if you can spend the time to really zoom in on who you're building for, let's say, I'm assuming again, you're early stage, right? You don't have any data. If you can, there was something that led you to start this company that you've started. And so this starts with the co-founders, which is, who are you building this company for? What specific problem are you solving? What happens when this problem doesn't get solved? So a lot of this is foundational work that needs to happen at the co-founder level. That's what filters into your ABM strategy. ABM is not something that happens post facto. It's core to your success. It's core to who you are as a company. If you do that, that actually reduces a bunch of downstream work. There's still work. Of course, there's work that you have to do, but you at least end up focusing your efforts on the right set of things, as opposed to pulling a list of 5,000 accounts and then you don't know what to do with it from there on, right? And you work backwards. If you're early stage, you need 5 deals. I'm making this up. You need 5 deals a quarter. Okay, then you go from 5 deals to 10 opportunities, 10 opportunities to 20 meetings. Then the question becomes, how do I get 20 meetings? To get to those 20 meetings, you can then figure out you need 50 accounts or 100 accounts to go after. Great. That is a much more contained problem that you can now go solve.
Got it. I know we'll run out of time very quickly. Mason, any last thoughts on the tooling, the challenges, how to get started? I know you were nodding earlier and you're speaking to the fact that, hey, that's not
good. I feel like we touched the tip of the iceberg for how to get started, because there's just so many things that we can address. So shameless plug here, if you want more content, like I have a podcast with nearly 100 episodes that just is on ABM and how to get started. So like, that's a great good place to look. As far as just a simple way to get started, I'll just give you a quick 4D framework. First is data. Data is who we're going after and why we're reaching out. So targets plus triggers. Those two things combined should have you have some really personalized messaging. So right fit account that's viewed our pricing page, that's a very different message than right fit account that doesn't know that we exist. Very different messages. Next is in distribution, how are we getting in front of them? Next is in destination, which is what are we sending them to? So what's the content? If we actually do want to marry ABM and PLG, depending on the buying motion, a destination could be a product-led growth motion. Hypothetically, man, we tied that together with a bow. Last piece is then direction, which is just how do you track it? So is it content engagement? Is it CTA click-throughs? Is it a form fill? Is it a booked meeting? Is it a product-led growth motion sign-up? All those are just tracking components. But if you have those four Ds together for every single one of your playbooks, you've got repeatable programming that you can run starting today. So those are the four Ds that I'll actually have to get started. And you just use what you got today to get off the ground. And then once you validate the model, you fill in gaps with new technologies and people.
Yeah. So to the audience, we will actually summarize all the four Ds and have a link to Mason's podcast. And you know, if Mason, if you can send us some blog articles as well, we can link it to the summarization as well. I know we are out of time. Any last words, any last recommendations to companies who are trying to figure out the go-to-market motions with, they may not necessarily have ABM, they might have a product which allows them to have a sign-up, or they don't even have a PLG-based product. They want to start off with ABM. Any thoughts, any recommendations on, you know, or any word of advice or encouragement, if you will?
Just on the ICP front, we'll point you to a couple of resources that might help you have these conversations in the company. There's tremendous value in having the co-founders and senior people in a company sit at the same table and discuss this. You will walk away with a much deeper and more actionable understanding of your customers and your prospects. So we'll send you some resources. From our vantage point, if you don't do anything else, if you do that, take that one step, you'll end up in a much better place.
Okay, ICP. Tushar, any quick word of advice?
Yeah, I would say just starting from that, do things in alignment across sales, marketing, and product, because they are all joined at the hip, especially the very early stage. What you're building, how you're talking about it, and how you're selling it is very interconnected. So do this exercise in conjunction, in collaboration versus in isolation or in sequence. It has to be done in lockstep.
Bring all the departments together. That's wonderful. And Mason, any last words there?
I mean, we've hit all around it, but just like, what's the vision of what we're actually trying to accomplish? Like, if you know what your vision and your mission are as an organization and who you're trying to serve and the impact on the world that you're trying to make, as small as that might be sometimes, like to think about it as impact on the world, but like, that's the core of it. Like, you build a business on a premise of solving a problem. Who do you solve the problem for? How do you do it well? The rest should actually fall into place, because ideally your co-founders or yourself, you bet enough on yourself that you think you can solve something. And I just ensure that I always help the customer. And
I think
such a basic answer, but it's just the truth.
I think it's probably the right first thing to do anyways. By the way, Sequoia Capital has a wonderful investor memo template, which essentially covers what's the business problem you have, who's the ICP, right? And how do you essentially bootstrap and get some of the departments, you know, rung along as you start the company. We'll add that link to this as well. Thank you so much, gentlemen. It was wonderful, and thank goodness we didn't really talk about PLG versus ABM. There's elements of ABM that's, you know, and I'll rather quote, Mason, I'll take your quote. If you want to make money, go ABM. You know, regardless, you have to do ABM one way or the other. It's just figure out when to do it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, we've got a ton of other episodes that dig into how you can build programs using your existing tech stack. Additionally, if you have specific questions that you'd like to ask, we host a weekly live stream on LinkedIn called the ABM AMA, where you can join and get your questions answered directly by experts. And lastly, if you're looking for practical templates, guides, frameworks, and playbooks, check out scrappyabm.com, where we're building a library of resources that help ABMers just like you get their programs off the ground. Again, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to seeing you in the next one.